flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now for our Green and Gold Update, brought to you by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. He is Jason B. Hershorn, co-founder of the Leap Newsletter. Him and Peter Bukowski do a great job with it. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Jason, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's going great, Sparky. Are we going to talk about how much we disliked All-Star games, or are we just going to dive in the Packers?
We did that in the first segment, and how we should eliminate all NFL and NBA All-Star weekends. And I think if you told the players that they could just have the week off, we'll still give you your bonuses if you make said team, even though nothing's going to happen, I think they take it. I think if you went to the players and said, tell you what, not the NFL, this doesn't work, but in the NBA it does. If you went to the NBA players and said, tell you what, you're going to play straight through, there's not going to be a week break anymore, but you're going to be done a week earlier, I think they would take it. And I think if you told NBA front offices the same thing, those teams that are good that ended up in the NBA finals and like 2 days later the NBA draft is, they now get more prep time for the draft based on when the season ends, I think they would take it too.
Well, I would take all of that personally, but we can get into some other topics.
Let's talk about the Green Bay Packers and losing a linebackers coach, run game coordinator, to be the new defensive coordinator with Jacksonville. We hardly knew him. He was here for a year, came from Miami. I don't count this as a LaFleur coach necessarily. But a guy that is projected to be really good, obviously, later. Some people freaking out online, on Twitter and so forth. Oh, no, not him. Look at how great Edgerrin Cooper was. Edgerrin Cooper's a stud. I don't care who's linebacker coach is. I think he's going to be fine. What were your thoughts on losing him?
To a certain degree, I do think it's fair to say that Edgerrin Cooper deserves the lion's share of the credit for Edgerrin Cooper's play. But doesn't totally dismiss that he had good coaching at that position in Green Bay. Anthony Campanelli wasn't just a guy who came out of nowhere to have a pretty decent group considering the talent that they actually gave him this season. Like, he had done a stellar job, at least that was the way that other coaches viewed it, when he was with the Miami Dolphins and at previous staffs. This is a guy who was viewed as a future defensive coordinator. So it is not a surprise in that sense that he is now a defensive coordinator. And it's fairly interesting that if this was this time last year, or maybe even a little earlier, when the Packers still had Joe Barry, at least officially, as their defensive coordinator, there would have been no one else on that defensive staff, in terms of the coaches, that you would have been able to say, oh, that guy could step into that role, like credibly do that job right now. That is not the case now. Obviously, there's Jeff Hafley at the top as the defensive coordinator, did a very good job in his first year in that role. There's Derek Ansley, who has done that job before and has interviewed for a job like that this year. And obviously Campanelli, who we're talking about, who just landed one of those jobs. So the makeover of that defensive staff really speaks to how well that coaching staff has been managed over the last 12 months. Was not always the case on defense, but I think there's a lot more depth there. So yeah, losing a coach like Campanelli does affect them. It is also the case they've done a much better job stacking that part of the coaching staff over the last 12 months, and they are better positioned to weather losses like this one.
It's funny you bring up how stacked they are. The guy that was an assistant in the linebacker room is Sean Duggan, who was the linebackers coach under Hafley at Boston College from 20 to 23. So it just makes sense that they probably just promote him and move on.
That's certainly possible. I mean, that, by the way, is not the only assistant on the Packers staff right now who worked at Boston College with Jeff Hafley. Their assistant defensive line coach this year was also someone who worked with Hafley at Boston College. Now, obviously, the defensive line didn't have as strong of a showing this year, and maybe that's a bit on that coach. Maybe it's not. We can't say as much from the outside. But there are certainly people on that staff that we know work well with Jeff Hafley, because it's not even just that, you know, they had success in 2024. They've worked with him in the past, and he wanted to bring them to Green Bay. So, again, it matters if they lost a quality coach. It is also the case, though, that they have more depth on that side of the coaching roster than they've had in a long time.
So when we talk about Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff he's obviously put together, and specifically on the offensive side of the ball, and we look at the quarterback coach, this is where I kind of I'm not as happy with what they decided to do at that position. And the reason I'm not as happy about that is because of who was available and then what they chose to do. So they chose to promote assistant quarterback coach from last year, Sean Mannion, who, again, was an NFL quarterback just recently. Last year was his first year out of being a player, and they obviously think a lot of him. My issue is Bobby Slowick was sitting there, who got fired as the offensive coordinator in Houston. You could have snatched him up and added yourself another brain into that offensive room. You kept Getsy, which I get, but he was there last year. To add Slowick, I think, is a better move than just promoting Mannion.
I understand that argument, but let me at least try to play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Sean Mannion played quarterback in the NFL, and if you watched him play, you could tell that other than being tall and having, you know, a strong arm, you know, he didn't really have a lot of the characteristics you'd normally associate with a guy who was in the league for a decade. A lot of the reason he was able to do that was because of his practice habits, because of the way that he was able to be a useful, productive member of the quarterback room in meetings, all the kind of things that you would need from that quarterback's coach. Now, he's obviously young in his coaching career, and I think that's worth pointing out, as you did. But it is also the case that he brings insight that maybe none of those other names that you mentioned could bring. So Bobby Slowick did not play quarterback in the NFL. And while he's worked with quarterbacks in the past, it was never as directly as Sean Mannion is going to now. You also consider that he's not going to be the only person working with quarterbacks directly. Connor Lewis, who did that in part this past season and in previous years.
Why is he even there? Why is he even there? If Aaron Nagler pointed out that every time game management came up with LaFleur, that's the guy that always got brought up by LaFleur. Based on how bad LaFleur's game management is, why is that dude even still here?
Well, I can tell you from my own experience as a reporter that just because you have someone who's feeding you, you know, this, the odds say that we should do this, not that, doesn't mean the coach is going to take it. Now, I covered the Chargers in 2019 when Anthony Lynn was very happy to tell you that they had a Carnegie Mellon graduate giving him game management advice, and it was also very clear that they were not following that advice. So maybe Connor Lewis is giving him bad information or bad analysis. It is also possible that he's giving him perfectly valid tactics, and LaFleur is ignoring them. We from the outside can't know. So I'm going to give Connor Lewis a little bit of a break there, because I think a lot of people are assuming mistakes there when we don't have enough evidence to say that conclusively.
Talking with our guy, Jason B. Hershorn, co-founder of the Leap Newsletter, along with Peter Bukowski. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Let's move on to another coach, Rich Bisaccia. Everybody doesn't understand why he necessarily was kept. And again, we go back to game management. I don't really care about the special teams thing. If we're being honest, and I know Pro Football Focus gave him horrible grades, I get it. But you fix the kicker situation. So providing you bring back McManus, you're good there. Whelan wasn't graded out well, you know, based on the numbers, but he never bothered me throughout the season. I had never thought he was an issue, just based on eye tests. Coverage units, yeah, they had a blunder here or there. I get that. But again, wasn't all that mad. But when I read in the piece by Tom Silverstein that he also is attached to game management, and again, LaFleur was horrible at it, that is a head scratcher for me. And he is the associate head coach, so you would think he would be listened to by Matt LaFleur maybe more than Connor Lewis.
Well, I think we have to break this down in multiple parts. At the NFL level, a special teams coordinator's main job is not really going to be getting the field goal kicker to make kicks.
Correct.
Or the punter to make punts.
But,
I know that sounds counterintuitive.
But Jason, this is the question that I would like answered. Whose call was it to go get Narveson from the Titans coming out of training camp and make that decision versus picking one of the two that you had at that point? Was that his call or was that Goody and LaFleur's call? That I don't know.
I couldn't tell you the answer to that either, but I also think that speaks to the lack of quality options that they've had basically the entire time Rich Bisaccia has gotten there when it comes to kicker. Now, I'm not saying that that washes all the sins off of him in that regard. There have been issues on special teams beyond the place kicker, beyond the punter. There have been issues, obviously, with some of the protection schemes at times. The point, though, is that they did not have a lot of salary cap available to commit to those places, at least in the years that Bisaccia has been there. So they had to go on the cheap, which meant rookies, whether they're undrafted or guys they're going to take in the draft. You look at that first draft, or the 2 years ago, the 2023 draft, and they took Anders Carlson. That was a draft that did not have, by most accounts, a lot of quality kickers. And, you know, they had at least one of those guys that went in the third round, another one that went in the fourth, both before the Packers were willing to spend a draft pick on a kicker, and I think probably wisely considering how all of those kickers have done. So given that they basically had no funding for this in terms of the salary cap, and even this year, you know, they went with Narveson in terms of week one, undrafted rookie, not a lot of money. They finally go to McManus, but McManus was essentially on the cheap because of all the stuff that had happened
off the field
over the course of, off the field stuff. So you add that all together, they have not spent a lot of money on that position. Now, does that mean that Bisaccia has not made mistakes? Of course not. But that is not on Bisaccia, the salary cap management component. Now, we will see what they decide to do with kicker this offseason. It does appear that they want to bring McManus back. And if they're able to, you would presume that that position is at least locked down for the foreseeable future. But if they have to go a different route, if they have to go and find another kicker, especially if it's a young player, you know, is Bisaccia going to have more of a say there? I know he had some before. Obviously, Anders Carlson is related to Daniel Carlson, who Bisaccia coached.
Yep.
But that might have just been the best option available of a lot of unenticing options. So that's very interesting. Now, in terms of the extension, I do think it's fair to say that the Packers special teams have been better under Bisaccia than they were under either of the previous two special teams coordinators. Low bar to clear, but they did clear it. Then you look at the main issues that they had. Again, it has been with the kicking game, which is mainly an issue related to how much money they were actually going to spend on the kicking position. And you take that out of it in terms of evaluating Bisaccia, and, you know, it's not super impressive. Like, this is not someone you would say is worthy of being the highest paid special teams coordinator in the NFL, which at least he was at one point in Green Bay. But it's also fair to say, like, this is not someone that you just have to move on from. I mean, is he Darren Rizzi? Clearly not. But they did not want to pay Darren Rizzi.
That's right. That's where I was going to go. They didn't pay Rizzi, and then a year or two later, they had to shell out the money for Bisaccia because Gutekunst realized he screwed up.
I don't know if that was Gutekunst's call. I'll leave it at that. But there definitely was someone high up in that organization that had control of the purse strings and did not want to spend that kind of money on a special teams coordinator. And you look at the Packers, not just under LaFleur, but over the past 15, 20 years, they basically never spent on a special teams coordinator until Bisaccia. That is something that you have to say is not a coincidence. And it took that disaster in the 2021, I guess it was technically the 2022 calendar year playoffs, to finally push them to do something about it. So, yeah. Is Bisaccia going to transform the Packers special teams into one of the best units in the league? I think it's fair to say that that's not going to happen. But with a quality kicker, which it appears that they have and they're planning to bring back, and with a decent punter, and I think Daniel Whelan is that, regardless of what he might have graded at by PFF or whatever, I think that's a unit that can be fine. And given what the Packers have on offense and given what we've seen from them so far under Halfley on defense, fine is more than enough.
Talking with Jason B. Hershore and co-founder of the Leap Newsletter. Him and Peter Bukowski do a great job. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Joins us here on Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's on the Fan. Sparky with you. Luke Getsy retained after kind of being in a consultant-type role last year after he got fired yet again. Do you like him being brought back into the family after failures in Chicago and Las Vegas?
I see absolutely no problem with it. Now, he does bear some responsibility for how that stint in Chicago went. Like, obviously, he had multiple years. They had plenty of time to implement changes. And we did not see enough of those changes. Part of the reason why basically none of the key stakeholders in those offenses, including the head coach, are there anymore. At the same time, I think it's fair to say at this point, Justin Fields, not a good NFL quarterback. And he went to Las Vegas afterwards, that being basically his only option if he wanted to be offensive coordinator in the 2024 season. And I don't know that anybody could have done a decent job there. You could have, you know, reanimated Bill Walsh, and I still think that that would have been a bad offense given that the talent that they had under center and along the offensive line. So does that mean that Luke Getsy is a terrible coach? I tend to think not. This is a coach that impressed with Green Bay in his first stint, went to college and did a pretty good job considering the talent that was available at Mississippi State, comes back to Green Bay, does a good job with a different position group, mind you. He had not worked with quarterbacks prior to that, and that's what got him the job in the first place. So I think he's a coach who has utility, and I think he's someone who is worth having in-house. You know, he was with the Packers in a consulting capacity this past season, but he was mostly working on the defensive side, not because he was trying to tell, like, defensive backs what to do, more of like, hey, if I'm running an offense, these are the things we're looking to attack based on what you're showing, the same thing that they did with Sala on the other side of the ball. So I think he's valuable. It's good to have him on the staff. Obviously, he's familiar with LaFleur and a lot of the other important people there. And, you know, I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. He was announced as a senior offensive assistant. That could be a variety of things. Could be someone who also helps out with Sean Mannion, for example, because he's a young coach. We don't know, but just having him in the building, I think, is an asset considering where that staff is right now.
Jason B. Hershore, and I'm telling you, you're going to follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH, co-founder of the Leap Newsletter. Jason, thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, Sparky.